Mini episode 1711 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1711. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you with one of our favorite roundtable panels that we do in the FDH Lounge. It is the fellas from the Callous Remarks podcast. You've got Philly media legend with radio and TV, Joe Stazak, and our great friend Steve Callous for many New York media appearances on TV and radio, and also the editor of WestchesterCountyPost.com, the sports editor, I should say. So we'll bring them in here one at a time. Joe, great to have you back on for the Super Bowl recap. Thank you for having been a part of the preview as well, buddy.
Oh, it was a pleasure, guys. My favorite thing to talk about. You know that.
Absolutely. It's always a lot of fun. And Steve Callous, yes, once again, thank you so much for being here and for being here last week for the preview. Great to have you in, Steve.
I love this trio, so I'm ready to go. I'm looking forward to it as always.
Yeah, well, as far as the picks went here that I made coming in, it's very selective kind of what we go by, because the side and total picks for the game, and I said coming in, this was going to be a nail biter. This was going to be right down to the end, and that's what it was. I was 4 for 4 on those. I managed to hit all of those ones. So I was 6-2.
That's awesome.
Oh, thank you. I was 6-2 overall. So it was a thing where ultimately this sort of depends on how we go as far as how we take this for my season totals here. If we exclude going 2-2 on the prop bets, I was 53.5% for the season if we're just doing the side and total on all of this here. And again, the Super Bowl was the only one I did the totals for because I needed a couple more W's. If we put the other stuff in there, I was 52.3% and oh so close to being profitable. But KC plus 2, under 47.5, and then 23.5 for the totals for each team. Again, I called it. I said we'd be sweating it the whole way. 24-20 was my pick for the final score. It was even closer than that. It came basically within a half point on it for the total at 25-22. And again, it's one of those things where, Joe, every pick that I saw seemingly had the scores right about in that range. There were probably more picks I saw that were above 47.5 than below if you're looking at this, adding up the scores. But everybody seemed to have it in that range. Just about everybody seemed to have Kansas City, even though they were the ostensible underdog in the game here. So it's a thing where outside of perhaps the overtime, I think a lot of this played out broadly the way that a lot of us expected. And again, a game reminiscent of, I talked about this at the Super Bowl party with my friends, that Rams-Titans Super Bowl that everybody remembers for being a classic, but it sucked for the better part of three quarters. There was really nothing that happened.
It was 16-0 at the half.
It was. It was a snoozer, and then it picked up late. You go back to the first Patriots and Giants Super Bowl. A great memory for Steve Callous, I know. That one was the same way. That game was a complete dog until well into the fourth quarter. This one, it took a while to get going, but when it did, it was a heck of a game. And in that sense, it was the heck of a game, however belatedly, that we all expected it to be. And broadly in the range of what everybody expected coming in, which is weird. It almost never plays out that way.
Right.
Ultimately, it was one of those things where these teams, again, they it took a while to get it going offensively for both of them. And again, a lot of this is credit to the defenses. But one of the things that I talked about coming into the game here, specifically San Francisco with the third down defense And that was what they were exploited on. Kansas City, 9 of 19 on third down. San Francisco, 3 of 12. So there was a big gap there. And that was one of the things. And that's what kept Kansas City in the game early on, because I think San Francisco was getting first downs on first and second down, but then third down would be where they would kind of fall apart. Basically, Kansas City just kind of hung in the game long enough, but they were able to exert their will. We talked about it coming in. So as far as how that played out, Joe, you know, your thoughts on, again, it was a defensive kind of, I'm not going to say necessarily masterpiece by the teams, because there was some bend but don't break. There were the crucial red zone turnovers for both teams early on.
Sure.
But as far as the way that the defenses really came up stout in this game, I'd mentioned an X factor coming into this, Chase Young, if he finally remembers how to be Chase Young, and it seemed like he did, at least in places. But these defenses rising up through the first stretch of the game and probably at least well into the third quarter. Talk about that, Joe, and what your thoughts were and how it may have defied expectations in terms of how stout they were.
Yeah, I thought that my daughter just got into Clemson. Oh, sorry about that.
Congratulations!
Thank you. She's going to Syracuse, actually. Are you kidding me? I'm a Villanova guy. I can't get my brain around it yet. So I'm trying.
Breaking news in the FDH lounge.
Sorry about that. I just saw that pop up. All right. Sorry. I thought both defenses were stout in the first half. And, yeah, they got a little help with a rare turnover by Christian McCaffrey. And then Isaiah Pacheco, after the bomb to McCole Hardman, the longest play of the game, Pacheco's first fumble of the year. And I texted my friend immediately. He texted the same thing back. I'm like, could have used one of those last year. You know, we're still both locked into last year. But anyway, sure. I thought the San Francisco dominated. Well, at least all of the first half. I mean, I think at the end of the first quarter, it was 123 yards to six.
Right.
And, you know, last year's Super Bowl, KC had 8 minutes of possession in the first half. They did nothing. You know, if it was a buck, they got a fumble six, you know, which really kind of kept them in the game. They were still down 10. And here we are again. They're almost down 10, and they kick a field goal late. I thought that, you know, the lines, which – I look at the lines. Who's controlling the line of scrimmage for most of the game? That's going to tell you who probably, you know, is going to be a winner. And San Fran did it for most of the way.
Yes.
However, and I think I even said to Steve, because Steve was all cranky in the first half watching the Chiefs play as poorly as he did. And I said, there's a lot of time left. I said, you know, don't worry, this team. And, you know, and here they come. They come out of the second half. They throw a pick. You know, I thought, and I said, Steve, and I said to other people, listen, San Fran has dominated this game, and they're up 7 points, and that's nothing for the Chiefs. You know, I might not have said that to Steve, but I was telling other people, it's nothing to the Chiefs. It's just like, what's going on here? They're letting – usually you say when the underdog is kind of, you know, don't let an underdog hang around. God forbid, you don't let the Chiefs hang around. You know, you need some separation, which the Ravens never got. You know, they came close, but then of course you look at plays throughout the play. One play here or there changes. Was it McDuffie or Snead that knocked the ball out of Zay Williams' hands at the goal line, and that turned that game around? And then he threw then a pick in the end zone. I mean, there's just plays here or there make the difference in a run. And again, I thought San Francisco's defense got a little tired, which everybody's defense gets tired late in the game, especially when you're out there a long time. And then I thought that Kansas City's defense kind of took over in the second half. And it almost seems like they wait till they're 10 points down, and that's when their Super Bowl begins. You know, they won 3, you know, down 10. That's amazing. And I thought, you know, Steve mentioned Chris Jones a few years ago when he wasn't really a household name as the guy to watch. And he was just, you know, if it's not Mahomes, I'm thinking, and not Steve Spagnuolo, I'm thinking if it's a player, Chris Jones was the MVP. He just, he prevented Buffalo from winning that game by one play, knocking the guard back into Allen when he had a wide open man in the end zone. He's disruptive.
and on one of the biggest plays of the game. I don't know how you miss him on 3rd and 4, you know, in overtime. You let him run unabated to the quarterback, and again, we'll get to Purdy a little bit. I thought he was good. I thought he needed to be great. And, you know, I don't think he was great, but he was good. He missed some throws. But I thought the Chiefs defense, you know, 21 games this year, did not give up 28 points. And in 20 games, you know, they played 21. They did not give up 25 points. They were a very good defense with two of the best corners in the league. In fact, I think the best cornerback tandem in the league. They're still young. And Chris Jones, I mean, I think he's worth every penny. And I think they only gave him a one-year deal, but I mean, he is worth every penny. I don't think they are holding that Lombardi trophy if it's not for him. If you remember last year, Jalen Hurts on a play where they did not convert and they had to punt on 4th and 2 in there. And I think that's when the game turned in the second half. Chris Jones was on the blitz and he just chased, you know, Jalen to the sideline and blew up that third down. He blows up everything. And I thought that Steve Spagnuolo was brilliant, and especially like the biggest plays of the game, 3rd and 4 in the 4th quarter, when if the Niners convert, they can run the clock down like the Chiefs did last year. It's not a short field goal, but Moody has a leg, and he was clutch except for the extra point. And they sent McDuffie right to the exact spot where he was throwing to Ayuk on a slant, and he batted, you know, he knocked the ball down, and there, you know, that changed the game again. The big plays of the game, the biggest plays of the game, there were about 4 or 5 of them, and they all kind of went in the Chiefs' direction. And I thought that I always say the team that makes the fewer mistakes, not the most plays, wins. And I thought the Chiefs, I know they turned the ball over twice in Mahomes threw his first pick since Christmas Day, but I thought that San Fran early on, when they had a chance to get separation, they got some penalties early and kept moving themselves back, and then they were off schedule and they had to punt. And I thought what was really critical is when they intercepted the ball at the 44-yard line to start the second half, they needed 3 points there at least to show something out of a turnover, whereas the Chiefs got, you know, the ball to the muff punt. First play, boom, they're in the end zone. And that, again, really turned the momentum of that game. The extra point didn't help. That's another mistake that, you know, you don't know how the game plays out from there. But I thought that was huge, obviously. You know, being down 3, being down 4 is a big difference. But I thought overall the Chiefs defense really kept them in that game and really, to the end, made the plays they needed to play to give Patrick an opportunity to win the game, and he did.
Well, a lot to unpack there before I pivot to Steve. But first of all, on the extra point, I had read a thing, I think it was that very day, that the casinos would have gotten massacred the worst if San Francisco won by a point, because the combination of that and then everybody that had Kansas City on the money line, I should say San Francisco on the money line. And,
on the money line, right.
Yeah, and then Kansas City with the 2 points. So, again, as I said on the preview, I'm not saying anything, but for those who think football's fixed, they point to things like that. They point to the financial incentive. I'm not saying that. I don't want to get sued by anybody. I'm too smart to say anything I could get sued for. But a couple other things there. Chris Jones, yeah, I mean, when I make a comparison on the plays, maybe we put an asterisk on it because he was basically unblocked, but reminiscent of the way that
blocked.
Yeah, exactly. But reminiscent of the way that Aaron Donald salted away the Super Bowl a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
And again, to compare him to, and this might be recency bias to say that Aaron Donald is the GOAT defensive tackle, but he may very well be. He's certainly the greatest of the 21st century. Chris Jones, again, has a chance to get into that conversation if he keeps going along, because he has been, as you said, such a huge part for them. And I will say, too, in terms of the drives of the game here, again, the one that was the biggest difference maker was the punt that went off the leg of the offensive lineman there and ended up being the fumble. That was a one-drive touchdown for Kansas City there. They had only had one extended drive previous to that, 13 plays that had led to a field goal. After that one play drive, the next couple ones, 12, 11, and 13, two field goals in the game-winning touchdown. So
they were 2 of 6 in the red zone. The Chiefs were 2 of 6
yes,
in the red zone.
Yes, but like that play seemed to basically sort of, you know, rip the spout off at that point as far as San Francisco's ability to control them. So pivoting to you, Steve, your thoughts on what was a defensive struggle back and forth. And again, I think, you know, also had to do with offensive ineptitude in a lot of places as well here through the first three quarters or so, give or take, of the game that eventually devolved into the kind of offensive spectacle we were expecting to see in the fourth quarter and overtime.
Well, I think the biggest surprise to me was the Chiefs were unable to run. I thought Pacheco would have a field day. I won't say McCaffrey had a field day, but he had a real, real good day. But I thought they got away from that in the second half. And McCaffrey, 80 yards rushing, 80 yards receiving. McCaffrey is the best back by far in football. But the Chiefs have the best quarterback by far in football as well. And yep. Even though the defense played great, I will point out the most amazing thing I saw. And I thought it jumped out in the first half, and I talked about it with Joe and Johnny during the game. So you've seen Mahomes get out of the pocket multiple times, and every time he gets out and throws the ball, he's got a receiver. He's got a place to throw it. He oftentimes, I'll say, seems to me 70-80% completes it. Maybe that's high, but I don't even think so as I'm saying it now. But in this game, in the first half, he broke the pocket, I'll say, four or five times. And every time he pumped to throw the ball, he didn't throw it. He kept it because he had nobody open. So I want to give kudos, which nobody else in the world will give, to the 49ers, slightly maligned, not much maligned, DBs, who really covered well in the first half. I think Tony Romo, to his credit, I think he did mention it once. But I've never seen Mahomes be like that, break the pocket like Mahomes does, not run for a lot of yards like he did later, but then look to throw, actually make the throwing motion, but not throw it, and then get either, you know, a 1 or 2 yard sack. I think that's kind of a joke, but it is a sack, or a 1 or 2 yard gain. So I thought early in the game, if they could keep that up, which they couldn't, but if they could keep that up, that was a real bad sign, and that's why I forget what Joe just said. I was cranky at the half, or whatever I was at the half. No, I was worried. I had never seen that happen to Patrick Mahomes, and certainly had not happened in the last 5 or 6 games they played, all of which I watched. So I thought that was a key to the game. It was like the game that Lamar almost lost. I forget who it was. It was number 48. The other team had a guy who could run with Lamar, and I've never seen that before. And Lamar looked like an ordinary running back. So it was a little scary to me. Maybe it was the Chiefs game. I'm not sure. But whatever. You just don't see these things. You don't see guys who can run one-on-one with Lamar and get him, or that he can't get around. You don't see Mahomes break the pocket, start to throw, and not throw it because the coverage was so good. So, yes, the 49ers lost the game. The other thing I wanted to talk about at a little length, because I'm getting a little grief for it, so Joe asked me the other day what I thought the turning point was of the game was. And I said, I'm not going to tell you I gave it a lot of thought, but right off the cuff, I said, I thought the block extra point for this reason. And everybody knows what I'm talking about. They would have been down 4, said they were down 3. To me, it's a totally different game when you're down 3 as opposed to being down 4. And I think for both sides, mentally, it's different. Why? You know why. Because the Chiefs can go down, and if they can't score, they kick a field goal, it's tied up. So they kick a field goal, as you know, and it's tied up. And then they kick a field goal, and then the Chiefs come back and get a field goal at the end. But I wrote this, and again, got a little grief for it. I said, look, you never know what's going to happen. But if he makes that extra point, the Chiefs are probably kicking a field goal. And at the end, of course, they're going for a touchdown. So you can make a case, in my opinion, that that one point, that one play changed the game mentally for both sides, and that the 49ers could have and maybe would have won had they made the extra point. Now, Johnny pointed out that on the extra point, he thought the kick, which was low, as we all know, but he thought it might have missed even if it wasn't blocked. I couldn't really tell. I watched it like 10 times, but it's a possibility. One final thing on the extra point, which I don't know how this can happen in 2024. It is beyond belief. But both ESPN, right, the worldwide leader in sports, and The Athletic, which, of course, purports to be the greatest whatever now, you know, sports, you know, Sports Illustrated might be gone, but The Athletic clearly thinks they're the best of the best and are happy to charge you to prove it to you. But they both wrote that Leo Chanel blocked the punt. don't even know who Leo Chanel is, right? So I look him up, 6'3", 250-pound linebacker. I watched the extra point 10 times. And the way they showed it, you guys will recall, is they showed it 5 times from the kicker side and then later 5 times from behind to see who was rushing. And I hate to say it this way, Leo Chanel, I don't know if he's white or he's a light-skinned black guy, but he has a whitish hand. And if you watch the replay, and if you guys still have it, especially Joe, if you have it, go back and watch it. When the guy goes up the block and the black hand blocks the kick, there's no doubt about it. And when you watch it from behind, you can see Chanel's number. You can see him with his name over the jersey, and he's there, but he's not quite there. And it was actually Mike Danna, I think it's pronounced Danna, D-A-N-N-A, number 51 on the Chiefs. He's actually a free agent. And he got no credit from either ESPN or The Athletic. I did see it in one other article. I wish I knew where, because they did give him credit. Might have been CBS Sports, or it might have been the Chiefs writer, who I guess would know better than most. But I thought it was such an egregious mistake. I can't even think of a mistake like that in a football game.
Well, here's why, Steve. On ESPN, the play-by-play, they just go down and look in the thing, and it says attempt extra point blocked by El Chanel. That's probably why they didn't even look to see who it really was. They just pulled it out of the ESPN play-by-play, I think.
Okay.
Well, I encourage you, especially because I know you had it. We'll talk about this.
Oh, I'm going to watch it. As soon as we're done, I'm watching it.
And if I'm wrong, send it back to me, because I'll have to put a mea culpa, at least on speaking of sports. But I don't think, again, I wouldn't be saying this. I mean, it's ESPN and The Athletic. You're going to cross them. But I think the answer in this case, and maybe you're right, Joe, but I think the answer in this case, they just got it wrong. And maybe you'll tell me The Athletic looked at the ESPN play-by-play. You might want to watch the game. It is the Super Bowl. And here's another one. Here's another one. Neither Nance nor Romo ever talked about who blocked the kick. And when do you not hear that?
Yeah.
Who blocked the kick?
Right.
Maybe there was a dispute in the truck, actually. And they just said, yeah, we won't say anything about it. But I'll say it again. A gaping hole in the biggest game with 123 million people watching. You might want to figure out who blocked it and give them a taste.
Well, a couple thoughts on that play that came to mind from listening to you there, Steve. One is, I did not expect to have a crossover on the Venn diagram on this show between eugenics and special teams, but we just did that. We accomplished it. So something unexpected here as we're watching the game tape and what to look for. The second thing is, I believe that ESPN's coverage of this, that it may have inspired a new scent that will be coming out. Inaccuracy by Chanel.
Rick, if you can find it, I'm sure you can. I think you should watch it 10 times, too, and tell me what you think. But I think there's little doubt, because you guys both know. If I thought there was any real doubt, I wouldn't have said a word.
Well, no, I'll go back and look for that, and I'm sure you're right. You always catch these things. There's another thing that I want to throw in also, too, that I had heard on a podcast today, and I'm going to give a shout-out to my fellow Ohio University grad, Dan McDowell, somebody who I actually worked with at WOUB Public Radio back in the day, and somebody that we will be booking on the show in the near future. So I just became aware of a new show that he is doing in the Dallas area, having started up the Dumb Zone podcast, a show that is a lot of great entertainment. They are friends with Bobby Stroop, who is the personal trainer slash coach, whatever, for Patrick Mahomes. So he was mostly coming on to talk about the post-game party in the nightclub there and what it was like hobnobbing with everybody. So he had some very amusing stories. But as far as it goes with Mahomes and what you said about moving around there, Steve, he said you do see, because he's concerned that Mahomes doesn't get enough credit for this. He said you do see a different Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs, because it's not that the stakes are lower, but it's a thing where you're out there and, you know, if it's an October game, you got to think about the rest of the season before you pull down the football and run. And when you're in those games at the very end, you don't have that luxury. You pull the foot down, football down and run, because the situation dictates it. Every game is one and done, basically, at that point. So I thought that was interesting to think about. I hadn't considered it from that perspective, but it makes sense that a guy like that is going to be more willing to use his legs in a situation where he's not worried about the rest of the season. He's worried about in the playoffs, the game and maybe the next game after it, if that. So it's a little bit different of a mindset, and I thought that was very interesting.
Rick, I will say the first half in those four or five times, he was looking to throw. He often, during the playoffs and the regular season, was always able to create them. It's different between what he did, which to put the ball down to run, was he going to get a 1 or 2 yard loss or a 1 or 2 yard gain? This was not one of these players when they're going man to man defensively and the middle is wide open and he's running 7, 8 yards before anyone can touch him and he turns those into 15 or 20. These were, he really thought he could hit a guy and the guy was covered. By then, there's three guys around him, so he's only getting a short loss or a short gain. That's all I meant.
Oh, yeah,
hey,
yeah.
Guys, I'm sorry to interrupt. This just in, I have the person who blocked the kick. Now, Steve, who did you say it was? Number 51. It's actually number 88, Jody Fortson. Now, I know why you think he's black. Now, I know why you think he's white, but he had a flesh-colored bandage on his arm, like a pad. No, I'm not kidding, because when I saw it, I said, oh, he's white. I looked at the roster because he's 88, and I'm like, wait a second, this guy's a brother. I looked again, and he has a wrap on his arm that makes him look white.
I'm going to watch it again, but it's 88.
No, Joe, I don't think that's right, but I'll go back and look later, but I don't want to make this into a big deal. But see if you can get the front and the back, because I think front and the back.
Okay, yeah, you're right. That's a good idea. And who did you say it was again? I'm sorry, 51?
Number 51, Mike Dana.
Okay, I'll look again.
Guys, tell me we're not going to get into the lunch bag test here, are we? I mean, this is, that's not anything that we're going to need to look into. this is outstanding. This is the level of analysis that you only get on this show. And also callous remarks, may I say, since I have the principles of callous remarks with us here. I want to ask each of you two guys about something that has become conventional wisdom. It has congealed in the conventional wisdom since Sunday night. And that is the notion that Kyle Shanahan, who has not been at his best in the second half, particularly fourth quarter of recent Super Bowls in the last decade here, that he screwed a pooch again, taking the ball first in overtime. I don't have a problem with him doing that, not least of which because his defense had just gotten completely gassed on the previous drive by Kansas City. So I think it would have been asking a lot on that. I don't get where everybody thinks that he screwed up here because, again, it was a thing where if they could have held them to a field goal, they really would have had the upper hand. And they had held Kansas City, as Steve said earlier, in the red zone. They played pretty respectably by the standards of most teams against Kansas City in the red zone. So I'm going to say, Joe, I disagree with the conventional wisdom. I think whatever else we might want to flog Shanahan for, to me, that's not one of the things.
I had this conversation with my girlfriend. When we first talked, when it was happening, she's like, I would take it third. You know what I mean? She's like, I would,
right.
You know, and I was like, I would go second because I can now know what I need to do, blah, blah, blah. I would still probably go second, but I don't think it wouldn't have happened because the Chiefs, now he doesn't know this, but the Chiefs would have gone down the field scored and they said they were already prepared to go for two. So it would have been, you know, moot to have it third anyway, but analytics, he said, you know, says, you know, we'll swap field goals, maybe touchdowns, and getting a third. I can see that. So to me, there were so many other things that I didn't, and I don't think he just missed it. I don't think he just like, well, yeah, we'll take the ball. Like some, no, I think that was calculated. And listen, we always criticize the results. So, you know, I would have taken it second personally, but I'm not killing him over that, to be honest with you, because I think there are two schools of thought, and you know, you can make an argument for either way.
Well, yeah.
If I could say this, Rick, Mina Kimes, who I respect tremendously, and Dan Graziano, who's real good, also on ESPN, they both said that they had each spoken to multiple 5, 6 people, like a dozen people each, 10 or 12 people each, about this before the game when these new rules were instituted. They were actually passed apparently 2 years ago, but this was the first time. You know, they made a big deal about the 49ers not really knowing it. But I don't think that's a big deal, as Jeff Saturday said.
I don't even. You're out there playing. Just
even if we don't know the rules, we're going for a touchdown. So he didn't think it was a big deal. But both Graziano and Mina Kimes said it was 50-50 when I asked these guys before the game ever started. This is a result-oriented beating of Shanahan, frankly. But I like what he said. We kick a field goal, they kick a field goal, blah, blah, blah. And then if we score a touchdown. And then Andy Reid after the game, he said, Shanahan's a great coach. Shanahan's a great coach. Shanahan's a great coach. Yeah, we were going to defer.
Yeah.
But as you know, Chris Jones, just my one sentence on Chris Jones is they should just give him a blank check. I know they have all kinds of money problems, but this guy should have got a blank check after 5 years ago. And now he's waiting more, but whatever. Chris Jones said that what Joe said, that Andy Reid said, if they score a touchdown and we score a touchdown, we're going for two. Now that's a fascinating decision, but paint that picture and that happens and they go for two and they don't make it. As we know, historically, the 2-point conversion is around 50%-ish. And I'll say with Patrick Mahomes, it's lower than 50%.
You kind of get an edge with Mahomes.
Imagine if they lose the game on the 2-point conversion. You don't think Andy Reid would have gotten incredible stuff? Now, Joe will say today, you know, he has the capital because he's got multiple Super Bowl wins before this game. But imagine if he did it with the Eagles.
Well, sure.
But he would have got slaughtered. So this is too result-oriented to me. Although Mike Greenberg, who I like, I don't know how much he really knows. Mike Greenberg, right? This was the dumbest move in the history of football, and nobody in the history of the future Super Bowls, as long as this rule is in effect, will ever take the ball first again. Now, I don't know if that's true, but the hypothetical I posited was this. You have two offensive teams. It's a shootout for four quarters. Each team scores six touchdowns, makes the extra point. It's 42-42. You win the flip. You're going to give them the ball? And if the answer is yes, because I expect them to score a touchdown, but I expect I'm going to score a touchdown, and then I'll go for two. I would then say, okay, you've essentially made it a coin flip game, not an 80% you're going to win game. So I agree with you, Rick, frankly, that it was not what most of us would have done. But if we were polled before the game, that would be much more interesting because, as Dan Graziano said, look, this is the first time it ever happened. You could run all the theoretical hypotheticals on computers you want. But it's never happened before, so we have no data, none, zero. College doesn't count. It's a totally different overtime. So I don't know why he got slaughtered so badly, except because of Atlanta, because of the last Super Bowl, because of this Super Bowl, he loses the big one. And I think it was Joe who said the other day that he really is Andy Reid before Andy Reid went to the Chiefs.
Yeah. I could see that, but I got a couple things there about what you said. But again, we have to, as I said before, I think put the context in here that the defense had just gotten gassed by that long drive down the field. We cannot decouple that from the reality of the situation here. You're not talking about a thing where the defense was, perfectly fine and set the go there, perfectly well rested. I will say, as far as not knowing the rules, it is, I think, damning on San Francisco that so many of the players said that afterwards, because again, the defense, there might have been guys thinking there at the end, hey, if they don't score by the end of the quarter, we win this game. There might be some players thinking that, and that would be completely inaccurate if you're thinking you just got to get through the quarter, which, by the way, I will go back to my old WOUB colleague, Dan McDowell. And as I had the experience at my watch party, where I also had queued up on my tablet, I had the Dumb Zone watch party that I was watching also. So I was participating in two watch parties, one just as a viewer. But Dan happened to chime in right towards the end there, like, why do they even have a quarter clock if it doesn't matter? And that's actually a very good point. Because if Kansas City would have had the ball for the sixth quarter as though nothing had happened, why did it matter that there were only 3 seconds left? I can
tell you what I think is the reason for that. Usually when you don't win the toss and whoever accepts
mm-hmm.
the decision of the call, the other team gets to choose a side. If there are some wins, they like to switch the field up.
Okay.
that's the only thing I can think of is possibly sometimes you pick this side because you want to kick this way in the fourth quarter.
Okay.
And if there is a win factor, that's probably why they switch it.
Okay. And so,
I can think of something also, Rick, and that is, and I'm sure you'll see the realities of this situation. At $7 million, well, two things. They want to give the players the rest that you get between quarters, which is longer than the timeout, but probably just as equally, they're getting $7 million for 30 seconds. And when you go between quarters, I think it's a legit 3 or 4 minutes. So that's another, you know, $56 million they might make if it had gone to a quarter. I don't know the exact. But Joe's is more practical and better because that's exactly what happens. Because as you saw, when they won the toss, they obviously elected to receive. And then Mahomes had the choice, and they had already talked about that, obviously, with the coaching staff, and he picked the way that they wanted to kick. And so it could have been, I don't know that it was, you know, that necessary in that game, but that would be another probably better reason as to why you have to do it.
I'm glad I mentioned it.
Guys, I have breaking news again.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, I'm now obsessed with this because we were talking about it earlier.
Okay.
I've gotten the answer, Steve. You're not going to believe this. Okay, so Fortson did block the kick with his hand, and also Mike Dana, it was blocked by two guys. It hits Fortson's hand, and then it goes, and then the left hand of Dana goes up, and that's where it goes off to the side.
Okay.
Look at it 10 more times, but I didn't see that. But
yeah, the hand. Watch the hand before.
I don't want to talk about it anymore, Joe. It's kind of beyond now the scope of where we're going. But I'd rather Rick look at
and
in the future, he can be the tiebreaker.
Well, Joe. Sure. Joe, I wasn't sure because we'd had one of one area and one of the other area before. I wasn't sure if the breaking news was that your daughter just got accepted into Harvard. I thought the Harvard acceptance was what was coming.
All right, I'm done talking about those. Sorry,
well, this is again. I'm glad I brought up Dan's question because it was one of the things he raised in the spur of the moment on a live cast, and it was a good question. But you guys had great answers for it. So I really, this worked out very well repeating what his question was because you guys, I didn't even tip you ahead of the time I was going to bring it up and you guys were able to answer it right there.
I didn't even think about the money, but Steve's right. The NFL does nothing if it's not about money.
Yes. That's a very, very good point. And something that I want to kind of bring this around on because I think there were many, many, many different things from this game that were very unique. And one of the things is so you look at the first back-to-back champions since much, much, much earlier in the 21st century with New England. And I think I think back on any of the times in my lifetime. And the one time, and I still think it's hindsight, is 2020. The one team you might look at might be the 79 Steelers. Or maybe in retrospect, you'd look back and say, they were getting a little older there. But, like, I've never seen a champion defend its title looking significantly more vulnerable than the year before, as they did for most of the way, and looking at it now, like, boy, oh boy, on paper, they should be much better going into next year because some of the, I've been railing on their deficiencies at wide receiver for most of the season. Well, you got to figure in the draft, right, they're going to address that. They're going to rejigger some contracts here again and try and free up some money. So normally you look at it like, well, we've seen a team shoot its best shot through the two seasons that won the title. And you go into the next year and it's like, well, they could do it, but something always kind of goes wrong in the quest for a three-peat. In a lot of sports, you see it really across the board, how difficult it is. So it's like, I cannot remember a time, and I'm not sure that I would remember a time in any sport, but I'm going to confine it to the NFL in my lifetime where you look at it and you say a team should have a better chance of winning the third championship than they did the second because of all the ways that they look poor offensively during the season and the upgrades that they should be able to make through the draft because you got last year they went draft heavy on defense. And that's what allowed them to have the kind of defense that really kind of shined and picked up the offense when they needed it. They're going to address the other side of the ball, you figure, pretty comprehensively in the draft. This is a unique circumstance, is it not? Where you look at a team that won the title the last 2 years and you say, on paper, they should be better next year?
they're young. That's why I kind of leaned toward the Eagles a little bit last year. They had like two rookies in the secondary, and the Eagles exploited it. They did. They put up a lot of points. Their defense became really stellar this year. They were just, and they got better as the season went along. I think that's what really carried them. Remember, they didn't score a point in the second half against the Ravens, but only held them to 10 points because they cost three turnovers. You know, that's what they do. They're opportunistic. And you look along the way, and they just seem to, I'm not going to say they got breaks because you make your own breaks, but there were things along the way that if you let them hang around enough, the other team makes mistakes here or there. The Eagles, the scoop six last year, the punt this year, a defensive breakdown when Tyreek Hill on 3rd and 15 in the first Super Bowl, they won, they turned that game around with 7 minutes left. There's just, if you let them hang around long enough, they will. It's almost like a war of attrition, who makes fewer mistakes. And late in the game, Mahomes, he doesn't make mistakes. He just doesn't. You're kind of waiting for it. That's why I probably would have kicked the field goal in overtime. You know, force him to. Okay, yeah, we know he's Mahomes, but let's see it. You know, he's not. Look, Tom Brady had a chance to do it against the Eagles in 2018, and there was a turnover. You know, you do it long enough. Once in a while, in a rare while, something will happen, like a turnover, a tip ball that goes up in the air, or a strip sack, or a bad snap, or something like that. That's kind of what I think San Francisco was hoping for. At worst, maybe, since they held them out of the end zone most of the day, I would think that, all right, let them, you know, kick a field goal, and we'll just hope that they don't go all the way down the field. But he was brilliant. 8 for 8 on the last drive. I mean, again, I told you, he's Dracula. You can't kill him, and you need to kill him when you have the opportunity, and no one's been able to do it in these playoffs. He's 15-3, and the one loss he had was Dee Ford. I know Steve likes when I bring that up, but yep. Okay, this is all making up for Dee Ford. You know, he could have won that, Super Bowl, and it turns out the Patriots going to win that. The other one, he ran for almost 500 yards behind the line of scrimmage in the Super Bowl because he didn't have his two tackles in, and the other one, I'll put a little bit of that on him. They blew an 18-point lead at home, and he even admitted he choked in the second half of the Bengals game at Arrowhead when the Bengals went. But other than that, I mean, the guy's pretty flawless, and he's got three. Listen, in Super Bowls, down 10, he's 3-1. Brady was 2-1. All others 2-47.
Yeah.
In the playoffs, in his career, he's 5-1 when coming from behind from down 10. All others, in the last 5 years, 6-48. You know, like he almost like he processes things as the first two quarters. And, you know, he gets all his information, and he might not be. And then he goes, okay, now I got this. And then boom, 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 boom.
Yep. And the second time he's gone, come back double digits against San Francisco in the Super Bowl. Did it both times.
Yep.
And again, Tom Brady, as you said, didn't get it done against the Eagles. And our man Steve Callis got to see it, didn't get it done against the Giants under similar circumstances the second time there in the Giants Super Bowl when they played them. So even Brady attended to happen at times. Yeah.
Well, Rick, Steve Callis and his son also saw him down 25-3. So.
Yeah, true. Oh, yeah.
He hasn't sniffed that. Not that he will, and I'm sure he hopes he doesn't have to, but I'll say this, the notion that he's the GOAT now, and you're already hearing this. The Ryan Smith guy on ESPN said to Herm Edwards, do we have a young GOAT here? And I'm like, no, don't wake me up when he has 4. Don't wake me up when he has 5. Wake me up when he has 6. But don't forget, because what we have today, LeBron, Jordan, you know, I'm an Oscar guy, but whatever. But LeBron, Jordan, they never played each other. But never forget, even if Mahomes gets the 6 or 7, which seems, you know, I said to Johnny when it was Brady 6, Mahomes 1, and they played the Bucs, I said, you know, if Mahomes wins this game, it's 6-2, and he's going to win a lot more. But when Brady won and it was 7-1, and now it's 7-3, I'm like, yeah, I don't think he's going to catch him. But even if he does, Rick, even if he gets the 7, I say they played against each other twice when it really, really, really counted. Brady beat him in the Super Bowl. And then Brady beat him before that in the AFC Championship game. So you can tell me anything you want, but if Jordan beat LeBron twice in the finals and they had the same number, or LeBron beat Jordan twice in the finals and they had the same number of championships, you know who you're giving the edge to. So he's always got that 7+ in my mind forever.
The final
and Brady. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
To say Mahomes is so far ahead of everybody else. I thought other guys were in the neighborhood. I thought the Ravens could beat the Chiefs this year. I didn't think the Chiefs would win until I saw what they did to Miami, Buffalo, and the Ravens. And then I thought I switched my pick. I liked the 49ers before the season started, but I picked the Chiefs in the Super Bowl because of what had happened in the playoffs. To me, the 49ers were lucky to be in the finals. But Mahomes today stands alone by far. Lamar's great, MVP. Josh Allen is great. Whoever else you want to call, I think Purdy's great. I think, as my son said, he's top 10, maybe even a top 5 quarterback already. No matter what Dan Orlovsky said, that Mac Jones or somebody could replace Purdy and do the same thing. That's laugh out loud funny. But Mahomes is now so far ahead mentally of these guys, as I always thought Brady was so far ahead mentally, as great as their physical skills are. And I think we all would think that Mahomes has more physical skills than Brady, certainly running the ball. But I think he's so far ahead now. If the Ravens didn't beat them this year, I don't see how they're beating them next year. I never thought the Bills would get over the hump because there's no way to me that Josh Allen is going to have 3 or 4 errorless games to win the Super Bowl. I just don't think that's going to happen. And I don't know else who to mention. Will Purdy grow even more? Yes. But I'll say it again. Mahomes stands alone by far. It's distant. You can argue who's second, but it's far back to who's second.
Well,
the other thing I'll mention, if you're going to compare 15 and 12, is that Brady did do it with two teams. And you know, obviously the jury's out on Mahomes, but winning with Al Belichick and winning a championship going to Tampa in his first, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And again, as far as the whole tiebreaker between the quarterbacks there, again, I'm just going to bring up what Joe said earlier too. D Ford and the two bookend tackles who weren't there in the Super Bowl against Brady. So I think that's a little bit of an equalizer as far as those things, the margin between them. And again, the bottom line is, what's so funny about all of this is that Kyle Shanahan's three worst moments in the Super Bowl against Brady and Mahomes. So I think he's just sitting here saying, yeah, Kyle Shanahan's got to be saying, can I get somebody else? Can you judge me against somebody else? You know, he's due for that, right? You know, he keeps drawing the short straw on the matchups.
I tweeted this the other night, and I told Steve about this because I think he's a fabulous coach, and he's only 7 years in, and you make mistakes, and yes, I know he's had, even going into the game, a little bit of that aura about blowing Super Bowls over his head, and another one happened. But Andy Reid, before he won anything, his whole thing was he couldn't win the big game. He has the dubious distinction of blowing a 28-point playoff lead and 2 18-point playoff leads at home, one to Marcus Mariota and one in the AFC title game to Joe Burrow. He had won a Super Bowl before that, but now he's like, you know, legendary and historic, and took him 21 years to win his first Super Bowl. So Kyle Shanahan, and Steve, I know, mentioned this earlier, like, yeah, I know he's taken some hits, but, you know, the difference is with Andy, you know, it was Andrew Luck and then Mariota and then Joe Burrow. Kyle Shanahan, unfortunately, like you said, Rick, he got Brady once, and he's got 15 more years to get Mahomes. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Uh-oh, like, really? How am I going to get past this guy?
Yeah.
If he's still hanging around, because he is just something else.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a very good point there. And I will say also, too, as I want to swing around to you guys for any last thoughts we didn't get to for the Super Bowl, I want to put a little bit of salt in the wounds for Mike Greenberg for all of his endless hackery. And note that Mecole Hardman became only the second player in NFL history behind Matt Snell to wear a Jets uniform and score a Super Bowl touchdown in the same year. So let's just I tweeted that at Russ Cohen, by the way, our great friend, Sportsology proprietor, FDH Lounge dignitary, author extraordinaire, because he is a Jets fan. So Russ took that in good nature, in good stride, when I tweeted that at him. Better than I would have taken it, let me just say. But I'll start with you, Joe. Any thoughts on the game and anything going forward that we didn't get to?
I give credit to, and again, we look at the result, but, you know, Brent Veach seems to do the right things, and every time they do something that is maybe against mainstream or, well, let me just give you an example. Kadarius Toney, I don't know what goes on above his shoulders. I saw him in the Detroit game this year, like, drop 4 passes. He complained on Twitter about his team saying that he was hurt when he wasn't hurt and he got benched in the Super Bowl because of an attitude issue. They pick him up from the Giants who cut him, and he becomes a star of the Super Bowl. Like, he, his longest punt return, catches the ball off his foot and returns it to the six, and then he catches the little corn dog play that won the game for him the other day. They pick up Mecole Hardman, who was in with the Jets all year. He basically led the team in receiving the other day. I mean, he had the bomb, and then, of course, he had the game-winning touchdown. Apparently, he didn't even know the game was over at that point. That's pretty funny. But little things that they do just seem to work out. Whatever they, you know, they have a phenomenal kicker. They've got that down. They don't make a lot of mistakes at critical junctures. You don't see that happening. And they have a good coach. And so I thought Steve Spagnuolo has gotten better and better. Like, he was kind of legendary for beating the Patriots, that 18-0 Patriot team. I know he went to New Orleans as a head coach. You know, I don't always believe that coordinators make great head coaches, you know, and he's happy where he is. He's done a phenomenal job. And last year, yeah, they gave up a lot of points, and he got helped out by the offense in the second half, averaging 6 yards a clip. But he was phenomenal this year, and I thought he was fun. Everything he did was phenomenal in the game, and it seems like just the little things that they do, you know, seem to work out. They just seem to work out for that team. And I guess when you're good, you know, good things happen when you're prepared and you make good decisions in the, you know, interest of the football team. And maybe it was a good decision not putting, you know, Tony in the lineup. I wouldn't have. I mean, he's
right.
I don't know where his head is. I know the Giants had a reason they cut him, and he stars in the Super Bowl, and then the first game of the season, he's awful, and he was offsides on that play that, you know, with the Patrick Mahomes, his head exploded after that, and they got it all together. And, you know, I think Andy does the right things. You know, he's not perfect, but he's got Mahomes now, and the difference between him here. And now he's a legendary coach. He's the quarterback. I always say, you give me a legendary coach who didn't have a legendary quarterback, you know. But that's Brent Veach and that's Andy. I mean, Veach apparently solved Mahomes as a freshman. And I thought it was interesting. Alex Smith was the quarterback at the time, and Veach would come into the quarterback room. Because, you know, I can't believe this kid at Texas Tech, Patrick Mahomes, man. We got to have this kid, you know, and the starting quarterback sitting there. But he, you know, he was cool about it. He got it. And, you know, it's little things they did, you know, moving up 17 spots that put them, that made them a dynasty. Let's put it that way. That one move on draft day and that scouting made them a dynasty. And, you know, as much as I'm a little Chiefs fatigued, I do like watching greatness. And, you know, hats off to them. I think they're great champions right now.
Well, they really are, and that's the whole thing, too. The wide receiver core, I mean, if there was a mascot for about 80% of the wide receiver core, it would be one of those blue recycle bins that you see out on the front lawn. And that Kadarius Toney is emblematic of that. I don't think they're going to be running.
By the way, I'm sorry. This is a given. Travis Kelce led the team receiving, but
sure.
Other than that, Mecole Hardman did. I mean, it's like.
Right.
And everyone else, you know, he threw passes to, like, 9 different guys. You know, everyone made plays.
You know what's funny is I was watching the game. So the Super Bowl party I always go to, it's my buddies that I've been playing fantasy football with since the 90s. And as soon as he scores the game-winning touchdown, they're already chuckling as I wheel around to them and scream, Mecole Hardman didn't do crap for me in the multiple years I've had him on my team. And now he picks a moment to show up. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I did that, and somebody would throw in my face my old saying, Mecole Hardman is the wide receiver of the future, and he always will be. Well, the future arrived in the Super Bowl. It never arrived in time to get me any regular season points. But Steve Callis will do the same here with you, my friend. Follow that. And as far as any closing thoughts here on the Super Bowl and anything going forward.
Whatever you think of him for missing the extra point kick at the time Super Bowl record 55-yarder after having a not very good postseason kicking field goals, and I think he missed an extra point as well. And then he had a 53-yarder, so I don't know if we can kill the rookie for having that block point. But as I said, I think it might have been the biggest point of the game. Of course, Butker, I don't know, an hour later or whatever, kicked a 57-yarder. And of course, he's gold now. He might be, he's given Tucker a battle. I think he was 11 for 11 in the playoffs. And as I said, kicked the all-time longest field goal, 57 yards in the Super Bowl. And finally, and I did this for Joe Stazak last time, so I'll do it again. Jennings became only the second player in the history of football, Rick, to catch and throw a touchdown pass. And, of course, the only other person to do it is, of course, Never Nervous Nicky.
Never Nervous Nicky, baby.
Has a statue in Philly there, so they're the only two guys in the history of football to do that. I just wanted to get that in before we finish.
That is incredible. It. That is, yeah. I mean, that was very, very significant when it happened in the first half, not least of which because it was throwing off all of the prop bets for what the first touchdown was going to look like. So there were a lot of people, I think, that were probably screaming about him throwing the touchdown pass instead of one of the two guys you might have expected. Right. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, a very interesting and colorful Super Bowl. And then I am so thrilled that as we're winding it around here, that just as we did on the preview, on the review of it, we didn't engage in any talk of the pop star and the tight end. Didn't get to any of that kind of stuff there, so that was great. Emblematic of the kind of quality that you're going to get from these guys. Of course, the Callous Remarks podcast, Joe Stazak, Steve Callous. I can't thank both of you guys enough, as always. Really, really appreciate it. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1711.